Welcome to another episode of Before You Kill Yourself with your host, Leo Flowers. I am Leo Flowers. Today, I'm going to be sharing with you notes that I took from the book Swimming to Antarctica by Lynn Cox. I love to read bios. I especially love to read bios of people who have climbed a mountain, swam a long distance, just went through some physical feat of endurance. And Lynn Cox swam from South America to Antarctica, freezing temperatures. And then, but before that, you know, the whole book is about how she was trying to and accomplished swimming through all these different seas and rivers and straits and all these things under sub-zero temperature, and how she was able to adapt. And I love reading these books for a few reasons. One is it instills in me and reminds me of the human's ability for resilience and adaptability. Two, it reminds me that no matter what success anyone has, I don't want to use the word success, no matter what a person achieves, is never done without teamwork. It's never done without asking for help, begging for help, pleading, crying, being upset, being bored, being angry. Like, you really go through the full emotional range as you're trying to achieve something that's right out of your reach. And the third reason I love to read these types of books is it's encouraging in terms of the human spirit, and it's a reminder of letting go of the outcome and focusing more on the process and making sure you're having, finding ways to have fun and celebrate the journey and not just be so fixated on the outcome. So, I really enjoyed this book, and I really want to hop into this because very early in this book, she talks about feeling connected to nature. And this is valuable because when we think about suicidality, I think about it in terms of pain, purpose, and prosperity, right? But there's a fourth, which is also people. Like, how connected do we feel to other people? Do we feel to ourselves? And do we feel to the world around us? So on page 12, she says, there's a tornado coming, right? And she said, I wondered for a second if I should climb out the water. But I pushed that thought away. I didn't want to get out. I was immersed in unbridled energy and supernatural beauty, and I wanted to see what would happen next. I want to pause there for a second because I think sometimes we stop, we get scared, we're so caught up in our fear of wanting to do something that we forget to lean into curiosity. What's going to happen next? That's what keeps us watching a movie or flipping through pages, is we want to know is a tornado coming? What's going to happen next? Is a tornado going to hit? Is it not going to hit? Do I get swallowed up by the waves? A shark? There's so many things that can happen next. And I think a lot of times our anxiety is tied to us thinking that we know what's going to happen next, right? Where it's like, if you're, me, I do stand up, so if I'm scared backstage, it's that thought of I might get booed, they might not laugh. But the truth is, there are a million things that could happen while I'm out there on stage. Someone could pass out from a heart attack. Someone could deliver a baby. Someone can throw a glass. Like, there's so many things that can happen. They could stand up and give me a standing ovation in the middle of my set, right? Someone can run up and hug me. There are just so many things that could happen that if we lean into the curiosity and the possibilities of what could happen next, it might give us that courage and that encouragement to keep swimming, to keep going, to keep living and engaging, right? She goes on to say, I enjoyed the sensations of every new moment. So there's that key word, she enjoyed it, right, of every new moment. That day, I realized that nature was strong, beautiful, dramatic, and wonderful. And being out in the water during that storm made me feel somehow a part of it, somehow connected to it. That's beautiful in terms of, I think sometimes we try to find connection through other means that really haven't been satisfying or fulfilling. And for her, it was pushing her body, being out there in the elements that really helped her feel like she was connected to something that was bigger than her, that she belonged where she was. And so if you're struggling, if you're in that place where you're like, I don't feel like I belong, then it may be nature, somewhere in nature, whether it's hiking, swimming, climbing, cycling, camping, there might be something in nature where you go, this is where I belong. This is where I feel connected, right? In chapter 3, page 27, she's in the pool and she notices, and this is, she's young. She's maybe 14 or 15 at the time. So she's still finding her sea legs, so to speak. She's still discovering what her body is capable of. This is, you know, years, a decade actually, before she swims to Antarctica. And she realizes that her times are leveling off. She's kind of plateauing in terms of how fast she's swimming from one end of the pool to the other. But she notices, though, she gets stronger at the end of the workout. Now, I bring this up because a lot of us struggle early in the morning, right? Motivation, work, gym. But the second half of the day or the end of our day, all of a sudden we got this second wind. We're writing a book where we can work out. We're talking at 1,000 words per minute. And I find that I'm typically like that. In the morning, I'm a recluse. I'm silent. I'm slow. I'm measured. In the evening, I'm more rapid fire, on top of things, real locked in. But there is a window for that, right? And so do not compare your energy level and your output level to someone else's. Don't think that because they can wake up and they're a go-getter that you have that, you should match that same drive. You might be stronger at the end of your day. You might be sharper, faster, quicker. And if you know that about yourself, then you may need to change the order of operations of your day versus meaning maybe put the more thoughtful, isolating, not isolating, but things that require more solitude in the morning, and then anything that requires you to be more public-facing, outgoing in the evening. Whatever works for you, you might have to change the order of operations based on what your needs are currently. And I also recognize that not everyone has that flexibility, but if you do, it's something to take note of. A lot of times we're not getting things done because we have it we're engaging with it at the wrong time. We think, wow, everybody else is waking up and working out and knocking all these things out in the morning. Maybe I should too. But I know Barack Obama wrote his book at night, you know, late at night after everyone was in bed. I know some people who get their work done during lunch. So being aware of where are you strongest, where are you sharpest, where are you, you know, whatever you need to be to get the thing done that you want to get done so that you can lock in, or see if you can arrange your schedule around that versus this feeling of swimming against the grain or like you're just going through the motions all the time, right? And so if you're plateauing, and you might be plateauing in a relationship, in work, at home, wherever that is, it just might be the order of operations. You might be a person who, instead of going out for happy hour with friends to close deals and network, you might be better off grabbing breakfast with other employees or other people or going for brunch. Whatever that is, figure out what time you shine. Instead of, you know, falling into this, well, everybody else is doing it at this time, that might not be work for you. You might be stronger at the end of your workout. And that makes sense for Lynn Cox because she's a distance swimmer, right? Now, one of the things that really got interesting was on page 31, and we're still in the open water chapter, and she's about to get into the water. I forget which body of water it is, but she has to drag her feet along the bottom to make, because there are stingrays in there, and if she drags her feet, she can kind of kick them up and prevent herself from being stung. Now, if you get stung by a stingray, what you want to do is put your feet in hot water, as hot as you can stand it, because that draws the venom out. Why am I highlighting this? I'm highlighting this because we've all been stung in life. We've all been hurt, whether it's been physically, emotionally, socially, mentally, occupationally. We've been stung. We've been stung by words. We've been stung by actions. And so how do we get the venom of that sting out? Heat. Whether you take a hot shower, a hot bath, a sauna, a steam room, find heat, whether you lay out in the sun, to kind of sweat out the venom of that sting. It's such a great way to cope with the pain of being stung by words from a friend or a loved one or a colleague. Find a way to sweat it out. Another way to incorporate heat is throw some sriracha sauce on your eggs or some hot peppers in your salad. Well, and any way that you can incorporate heat to sweat out the sting of that venom would really be helpful to you. And I've done that. I remember during the pandemic, our therapist recommended that. She was like, because we were talking about how we were a little bored, and she was like, y'all need to spice it up, literally. You know, throw in some hot peppers and some sriracha, get a little spice, a little kick. And I was like, she's right, because when you feel it, when you feel yourself heating up, you literally start to heat up. So going on to page 33, and we're still in open water, she talks about fitting in. And this is something that we all struggle with, right? We all want to belong, but I did a podcast on when to fit in and when to belong. And she talks about how she just joined a swimming team, and they're out in the open water. She can clearly outswim everyone to the point where she can break a record. But she thinks, I just met them. I don't want to leave them behind. We agreed we'd stick together. So instead of extending her lead and reaching out and breaking the record, she stayed with the group. And then you know what happened? Two guys left the group behind, and they ended up breaking a record. So then she came back later on her own and broke their record, which is pretty cool. But the beautiful thing is she made a decision to fit in. And as I shared in previous episodes, it's not about not changing or adjusting ourselves to fit in versus belonging. It's about recognizing when we're choosing to fit in and when we're choosing to belong, right? So fitting in is like you're changing who you are to be a part of this group. Like she's holding herself back. She's suppressing a part of who she is because she's much faster and stronger than the rest of the group. Belonging is when you're accepted by the group for who you are, where they're swimming with her knowing she's going to outpace them. That's when we get the sense of belonging, where I showed up as my full self. You know that I'm the dopest, I'm the greatest, and there's still an acceptance there, right? So there's a time and place to fit in, and there's a time and place where we belong. And neither of those states are permanent. There are going to be times where we're going to have to fit in, and that's fine. There'll be times where, you know, we get to belong, and hopefully there's an ebb and flow between those two things, and we're not stuck in one space or the other. Because, you know, the upside of fitting in is that we get to discover other aspects of ourselves. We get to, you know, play different roles. The trouble comes when we get stuck in those roles that we're playing. It would be like if, you know, Vin Diesel was walking around as Toretto from the Fast and Furious all the time, right? like that would probably be weird for him, I would imagine, and just not authentic to who he is. On page 44 in the chapter called 26 Miles Across the Sea, she talks about how she got stuck in seaweed. And the coach said, if you're stuck in seaweed, reverse your stroke. Now, I've never heard that term before. I didn't even know you can reverse your stroke. I just thought if you're stuck in seaweed, you just try to pull it off. And he's like, no, reverse your stroke. And I looked it up. Sure enough, you can reverse your stroke. And so I say this to anyone who, when we get in an entanglement, when we get stuck in a place, especially verbally, like you ever get in an argument with somebody or a discussion and then it starts to go sideways and you feel like you're stuck and see, like, how do we get here? And that's a great question to ask. How did we get here? How did we get to this place where it seems contentious or like where it's become uncomfortable? Where did we go wrong? And then how do we work our way backwards? Well, then what you'll discover is, you know, the person will be like, you said this and I said that. And it's like, oh, okay, I see where we got tangled up. Let's reverse our stroke. And same thing, you know, through your day, you might feel entangled in your day and you're like, how did I end up in this situation? And you might find yourself having to go back, right? You might have to reverse your tracks. You might have to go over your work again from the day or from earlier that day, or retrace your steps of like, I did this, I did that. And sometimes when you find yourself in the entanglement of life, in the seaweed of life, excuse me, you'll discover that maybe you forgot something, right? You're like, oh, I typically do this. I forgot to do that. That's why I got in this entanglement. Or I forgot to bring this, or I brought something extra, or you know, just whatever it is. It's like, this is the beauty of reflecting on your day, journaling, sitting down, and just going over your day. How did it start? How did it continue? How did you feel at the start of the day versus in the middle of the day versus the end of the day? I was just talking to Michelle's mom, and her mom was noticing that she was always wanting to take a nap in the middle of the day. And then she discovered that her calcium was low. So she was replaying everything she was eating and what she was doing, and then, you know, discovered that it was something in that she wasn't eating enough of, or that she needed more nutritional supplements. So she reversed her stroke. So I thought that was really cool, because there are times where I'm like, wait, what happened? Like, it's kind of like replaying a conversation or an incident so that you can figure out like how not to get stuck in that again. You're like, how do we get into that kind of discussion? On page 87, Homecoming, chapter 7, she talks about detraining. And this is the last thing I want to share with you, because I think this is very valuable also. She says, a couple of days after I got home, and this is after a long open water swim, I went to the Belmont Plaza pool to detrain, stretch out, and just get back into the water. That is a phrase I hadn't heard before. You know, and I have a background in personal training, but I haven't heard of detraining before. I've heard of, you know, slowing down, scaling things back. But this term detrain, which basically means to lighten the load, right? If you've been going intensely for anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks, you want to have a week where you detrain, where you are slowly lightening. You know, if you've been benching 200 pounds, then you want to scale back to 150, then maybe 125 and 100. You're just kind of giving your body active rest. You are detraining. And I think that we have to find a way to detrain at the end of the day, right? We've been going hard, intensely all day. How do we detrain at the end of a week? And how do we detrain, you know, at the end of a month or every 3 months? I have a friend who schedules a vacation every 3 months. I know that that is a privilege for most people, that she can do that. But there are also people who have the ability to go on vacation and detrain and they don't. They just keep going, and they don't realize that if we don't detrain, if we don't intentionally slow things down, scale back the pacing on occasion, then we can overtrain, we can burn out, and we can lose our enthusiasm for what it is we're doing. You know, if you're writing a book, if you're raising a family, starting a business, whatever it is, there needs to be a built-in protocol or time period where you are just lightening the load, where you're whether it's at the end of the day, you're cutting the phone off, taking a bath, stretching out, or at the end of the week where maybe you go rent a cabin somewhere, or you're just not taxing or overtaxing your nervous system. A lot of times what we call relaxing is not relaxing at all, right? Meaning that we might work all week, we have the family and the kids, and then on the weekends we party and we drink. I mean, and so at no time are we giving our nervous system any time to decompress, detrain, and recover so that on Monday we can feel restored. If you're a person who's going to work on Monday and you're dreading it, it may be because you're not adequately taking care of yourself, true self-care over the weekend. So you may want to look back at that, reverse your stroke, look back at how are you taking care of yourself over the weekend so that you can show up on Monday with enthusiasm. And if there's something going on at the workplace, is there something that you need to confront, address, because you've been avoiding it? Because, you know, a lot of times we think that avoiding confrontation, we don't want any trouble. We don't want to disrupt anything. And what ends up happening is it leads to a confrontation later. So we're either going to confront them up front, or we're going to confront them later. But trust me, there will always be a confrontation because things build up that we've been suppressing. And at some point, it comes to a head. So I hope that you found some value in today's episode, and whatever that value is, share it with one other person, whether it's about reversing your stroke, detraining, or I forget whatever else I said in the episode, but whatever nugget that you pulled out of here, share that with one other person. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Before You Kill Yourself. Remember, this podcast is not a substitute for you calling the 988 or any of the other 800 numbers in all the show notes. You can chat, talk, text. You can go to thrivewithleo.com for one-on-one coaching with yours truly. Let's get to tomorrow together.